Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, week two, a tough loss for the Packers at U.S. Bank Stadium, opening up the Vikings' new dig, 17-14. And I think as you and I both left that stadium on Sunday night, you had to feel like the Packers had their chances.
Absolutely, Mike. I think one of the discussions we had last week when we were previewing this game was Adrian Peterson in the run game. And if you had told me that they would have held the Vikings to only 30 rushing yards, 1.4 yards per carry, I would have liked the Packers' chances in this game. But Sam Bradford, man, really played well, and he proved me wrong. I sat here last week saying I don't know how a quarterback can be ready only 2 weeks into this. He took 10 quarterback hits, 4 sacks, did not have a turnover, and I thought played really well. And unfortunately for the Packers, just a few too many big plays, and offensively just weren't consistent enough.
Yeah, Bradford was the star of the game, no doubt about it. He played some of the pinpoint throws that he made with pressure in his face, with taking a big hit. I thought both of his touchdown passes, the one to Rudolph on the corner route and then the one to Diggs down the middle, were both fantastic throws. And I was with you. I didn't think with 2 weeks of practice time in a new system coming over in the trade late in training camp that a guy could perform like that on that type of stage against a defense that has been playing pretty well. As you said, the big plays are what bit the Packers, but tip your hat to Sam Bradford. He was the MVP of the game. There's no question in my mind.
I often talk about Spoff stats and info. One of my stats that I came up with last year, the Packers, I think they only lost one game last season in which they had 5 or more quarterback hits. And I think it was the playoff game in Arizona.
Okay.
They had 10 in this game, and yet Bradford stood through it. You said that pass to Diggs, that 25-yard touchdown. With the way those cameras are now, you can kind of get that field-level look at it.
Right.
Mike Daniels is barreling towards him, and he just puts it right over the top. It was an incredible pass.
Yeah, it was right on the money.
It's those type of plays that, you know, I thought Diggs had a tremendous game. Bradford had a good game, and that was 64% of their offense, and it certainly was enough to get the win.
Yeah, and that being said, Minnesota still only scored 17 points, and the Packers had 3 really good scoring opportunities in the second half. And not to be, you know, a second guesser, you and I talked about it at the time, the 4th and short in the red zone. I leaned over to you. You leaned over to me. We didn't like it when the Packers were coming out of the huddle wanting to go for it there. I think both of us, our instinct was saying, you know, kick the field goal, tie up the game. It wasn't 4th and inches. It wasn't 4th and a foot. It was 4th and about a yard and a half,
right?
Almost 2 yards. I just didn't like the decision. Mike McCarthy obviously went with his gut, and it didn't work out.
Correct, and those are the decisions head coaches have to make. The most difficult decision in my day is whether or not to put cream in my coffee. So, I mean, when you're in a situation like that, you have to feel the rhythm of the offense. Certainly, as he talked about afterwards, he thought on a 12-play drive that was the right call for them. He owned up to it, said it was my call. But I tend to be more conservative in nature. I think with some of the issues the Packers have had deep into the red zone, you know, late last season, early this season, you take the 3 points, you move on. But at the end of the day, that's not the direction they went. Weren't able to get the first down, rallied back, were able to get some nice, you know, some penalty-aided drives working in their favor. And then when it came down to crunch time with the chance to try winning it, it didn't work out. And you know, Trey Waynes, after a really, you know, kind of had a rough performance, and it was kind of a tough night for him.
Yeah.
Came up with a big interception, and that's what, you know, guys are going to do.
Yeah, Waynes came up with the big play, no doubt about it, kind of erased an otherwise rough night for him. As you said, the Packers' last 2 possessions, you cross midfield twice like that in the 4th quarter. You hope to at least be able to get some points out of it. I think the one that's most frustrating is right after Rodgers hits Richard Rodgers, a 15-yard pass over the middle. It's 1st down on the Minnesota 40-yard line. You're obviously trying to score a touchdown, right, but you don't even necessarily need another 1st down. 5 or 6 more yards, and Mason Crosby's within range to try to tie the game. And Aaron Rodgers is just trying to sidestep pressure and throw the ball away, live to play 2nd down. It gets swatted out of his hand by Brian Robeson. The Vikings recover, and a huge momentum shift where you're looking at the Packers at least tying the game on that drive, you would think.
Jordy Nelson made such an astute observation in week 1 of how important it is for this team to get 1st downs, and then also for every NFL team to convert on 3rd downs. And the thing about this, and TJ Lang talked about it afterwards in the locker room, it just, it just didn't come together. There just wasn't enough rhythm. There wasn't enough consistency. It was they had difficulty getting the run game established with Eddie Lacy. The timing was off on some of the patterns. Obviously, Rodgers was sacked 5 times. So, realistically, you look at the defense being able to only give up 17 points, considering some of the adversity they faced with not having Sam Shields. Jordy Nelson said it best. You know, they have to execute, and they didn't do enough in that game against the Vikings.
Yeah, well, plenty more to talk about from the tough loss in Minneapolis after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, getting back to what we were talking about with the Packers offense, really a tale of two halves almost. When you look at it statistically, Packers only had 65 yards of offense in the first half. Granted, they did have a 40-yard pass interference penalty right there that set up the first touchdown. But then they really did start to move the ball against a very good defense in the second half, racked up almost 200 yards of offense, didn't convert it into enough points, obviously, as we talked about with the missed opportunities. But I think, and I'm not just trying to be a glass half full guy here, but against that defense, I think the second half and the way Rodgers started to find a little bit of rhythm, even though the turnovers doomed him in the end, I think it's a sign, the best sign we've seen so far, that maybe this offense is ready to break out.
I think so. This was a good test for them, certainly. Mike Zimmer's defensive front, you and I discussed it while we were sitting at US Bank Stadium, too, how many times they were threatening zero coverage over the top and just having 8 guys on the line, 9 guys in the box, and then at that split second, they'll drop 4 of them.
Yeah,
it's such an innovative scheme, and we talked last week about the parallels, the Dom Capers, you know, it's a 3-4 versus a 4-3, but those zone drops and some of those concepts that are there, it is difficult for any kind of quarterback, regardless if it's Aaron Rodgers, to pinpoint exactly where the pressure is going to be coming from, who's going to be dropping into coverage, and certainly Mike Zimmer has been well documented, has had his share of success against Rodgers and the Packers in the past, so you look at the positives, though, in terms of what they were able to accomplish. Jordy Nelson had a big explosive play for 39 yards that later set up a touchdown. So there were plays to be had. Unfortunately, as everyone in that locker room will tell you, it just wasn't consistent enough across the board.
Yeah, and I think the sloppiness overall of the Packers, particularly with the ball security and whatnot, we saw it right away. The very first drive, Davante Adams catches a short hitch and boom, the ball gets popped out.
Right.
Packers were lucky to get it back. Aaron Rodgers had a couple of fumbles in the pocket when he's getting pressured, and the Packers were lucky to get those back. Then in the fourth quarter, you know, your luck runs out eventually on those kinds of things. Just like we talked about last week, the Jacksonville Jaguars aren't going to be able to convert every fourth down when you keep going to that well. Well, the Packers eventually couldn't recover every fumble, and they lost the one, and then Rodgers threw the interception later. This is not typical of the way the Packers handle the ball, the way they preach ball security. It's a big thing for Mike McCarthy, and give credit to the Vikings defense, but this was not this was not the Packers that we expect to see as the season goes along.
No, and I'm interested to see what exactly offensive coordinator Edgar Bennett will talk about with these guys, because at the same time, you do want to improve the ball security. They had some really heads-up plays as far as the scramble drill, though, trying to go and scoop it up after a couple bang-bang-type plays. But at the end of the day, and I know Packer fans, they want this to be Madden football. You want to score 45 points every week and put up 500 total yards. But as Mike McCarthy said in the offseason, it is a lot of the time fundamentals.
Yep.
And certainly you need to have the ability and the talent and the separation to make plays happen, but you also can't shoot yourself in the foot, so to speak. So that's what happened in terms of they kind of flew close to the flame a little bit with some of those fumbles, balls ending up on the ground, and then finally it came back at the wrong time for them. So what that reason is, I mean, obviously the blindside stuff with quarterbacks, it's tough. But certainly, as Aaron Rodgers said afterwards, you have to take care of the football.
Yeah, and the inconsistency was evident in week one against Jacksonville. There was still some more of that. I think the frustrating part, though, is even when there are some nice plays, we saw Jared Cook getting more involved in the offense, but yet on a big third down, a third and long, he catches the pass over the middle and essentially gives up the first down when he probably should have had it. The Packers end up punting from midfield instead of moving the chains there and perhaps getting the momentum. Aaron Rodgers even talked about early in the game, he missed a couple of throws that normally we see Rodgers make. And you hit those throws, you move the chains, you quiet the crowd a little bit and get a little bit of momentum on your side. And those things just weren't happening with enough regularity to beat a good Vikings team at home.
The Packers talked about this in the locker room. They didn't think that the noise really had too much of an impact. Some guys said it's still louder than Seattle. Many didn't think it was as loud as the Metrodome, considering the kind of the bandbox that place was. But what was interesting to me is that there wasn't really a point in the game in which the Vikings crowd was completely out of it. You were hearing something throughout when the Packers were on offense, and that's going to be difficult to overcome. That's going to stress your communication. Kudos to the Packers. They didn't have any big, like, false starts or anything like that at all, but it's still going to challenge you. And certainly when it came to some of the perimeter stuff, there were some things that just weren't quite on the same page.
What did you think of the noise at that new stadium? I know press box-wise, we were in a little different location.
Yeah.
Rather than being in the middle of the field, we were kind of on the corner of the end zone, maybe a little higher up from the field than we were at the Metrodome press box. I thought it was loud, don't get me wrong, but all the talk about maybe it was going to be louder than the Metrodome and whatnot, I personally didn't sense that where we were sitting, you know, maybe an equivalent, but not anything that was louder than where the Vikings used to play.
No, I felt like I was at a concert, but unlike the Metrodome, I wasn't in front of the woofer, so to speak. So
yeah,
I did feel it afterwards, and we were driving on the bus and got back to the airport and everything. It was that constant ringing in my ears,
yep.
But it seemed like this morning it wasn't there as much. So it's going to be a big home field advantage for them, though. I mean, they're doing their skull thing now where they chant and bang drums
and all this kind of stuff.
The mountain from Game of Thrones, like, gets them all revved up and everything. So, yeah, it's a beautiful stadium.
Absolutely.
That was, you know, I think it's going to be gorgeous to play there during the day with the light shining in. But I don't know if it's going to be something that's going to be, you know, maybe turn into CenturyLink Field in terms of some place where you just really can't. It's difficult to overcome those elements.
Yeah, for sure. Well, more to talk about on this week 2 defeat, 17-14 for the Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, I have to ask you this. Did we potentially see in Minneapolis the emergence of the next great wide receiver in the NFC North? Stephon Diggs, fifth-round draft pick last year, I believe, out of Maryland. He had his way with Demaryius Randle. There's no question, no two bones about that. 9 catches for 182 yards, a couple of catches of 40-plus with a 25-yard touchdown. We talked a lot in the offseason about the Detroit Lions losing Megatron, a big receiving star leaving this division. Brandon Marshall has left the Chicago Bears. What'd you think of Diggs, and what does the future hold for this kid?
You know, you see guys come into the league and contribute as mid-round draft picks. I was sitting there, and I was talking with some people after the game about this too. I can't think of anybody who has come into the league as a middle-round, late-round guy, and made the immediate impact that Diggs has made. It just makes you wonder what people missed on this guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he looks like, I mean, we're talking, you want to go back over the last 10 years, some of the draft picks and investments that the Vikings have made in their receiver position, and they find a franchise receiver in the fifth round. This is how you build a football team.
Yeah,
you knew you're going to build your defense up around Mike Zimmer's philosophies. That's going to be your bread and butter. You hire a defensive coach, that's where you're going to win and lose games. But offensively, they're starting to get those weapons that can really make you take notice of what the Vikings are doing. It's just one game. We got to see how an entire season plays out. But if Bradford's there and Diggs and that chemistry's for real, NFC North has to be on its heels.
Yeah, and the Vikings spent a first-round draft pick on that potential franchise wide receiver this past spring, drafting Laquon Treadwell
right.
out of Mississippi. We haven't even seen him yet through 2 weeks. This passing offense, Kyle Rudolph, a very good tight end, a productive tight end, and had some big plays for the Vikings last night. But this passing offense goes through Stephon Diggs. I mean, he's running deep down the sideline. He's running deep over the middle. He's running the short stop route on fourth and four for 5 yards to move the chains. He was everything that Sam Bradford needed him to be last night, and I think he was a big reason that Bradford got comfortable very early, as much as comfortable as
sure.
he could be with the pressure he was under.
No, but I mean, in terms of the throws he was making,
yeah.
and the touch he had on a lot of those footballs, Adam Thielen, I think, has really improved too. Seeing him, Dom Capers alluded to him last week in terms of kind of what the progress they've seen and what he presents seems to complement Diggs really well. You talked about Rudolph. He's been doing it for years, a
yep.
consistent presence in that offense. As I said during our open, if you would have told me coming into this game that Adrian Peterson would have 19 rushing yards, the Packers would hold them as well as they did in that capacity, but the Vikings would be able to throw the way they did, I wouldn't have believed you. But
yeah, I agree.
It also goes to say exactly, Demaryius Randall is going to be a really good cornerback in this league. They have some really young, nice second-year players there at that position. But I've been saying this for 2 years now. Sam Shields is a lot better than the NFL gives him credit for, and he makes that defense a lot better, and it makes the life a lot easier for that secondary, a young secondary. So not having him out there, I think that did have a direct correlation to some of the issues that the Packers had in that game.
I agree with you. That we talked in the offseason, and we heard from Dom Capers last season when Sam Shields missed time. This Packers defense is not the same without Shields out there. Now, make no excuses. The Vikings were missing a top cornerback in Xavier Rhodes. They were also missing a top defensive lineman in Sharif Floyd for this game, so they had their issues to overcome as well. But Sam Shields is a big part of this Packers defense, and Demaryius Randall, he's a really, really good young player who's coming on, but these last 2 weeks just show you the fickle nature, the difficulty of playing that position in the NFL. He was maybe the best, or certainly one of the best players on the field in Jacksonville for 4 quarters, and then last night, Sunday night in Minneapolis, just wasn't his night.
It is, as much as I'm sure Green Bay fans won't want to hear this, it also shows you the beauty of the NFL. You come into the season, so many questions about run defense. We need to sign defensive linemen. They're not going to be able to hold up. The run defense has been great through 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
And the secondary, where the Packers feel they have their most depth, is where they've really been stressed by both injury and some of the big plays. So that's how the NFL works. It's going to be ebbs and flows, and right now those young guys have to work through this.
Yeah, for sure. Well, before we throw it to a break, we'll take care of a little bit of sponsor business. Wes, we all know that Green Bay fans are the most devoted fans in the league, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious chunky beef with country vegetables. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game, and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, final segment here. We take a look at the Packers schedule. The schedule maker did the Packers no favors with this 2-week opener on the road at Jacksonville in the heat and humidity of early September, then opening up the brand new stadium of a division rival. Doesn't get much tougher as far as a 2-game opener to your season, but the Packers have survived it. You'd love to be 2-0, obviously, but you're 1-1, and now the schedule finally tilts in your favor. Packers don't have to go on the road again until Halloween weekend. You have a stretch of 5 weeks here with 4 home games and the bye week sprinkled in, 2 of those games against division opponents in the NFC North, and it's time for the Packers to get going.
Yeah, this is when you have to make hay. No question about it. I mean, think about it. If you take the whole month spread that the Packers had, you flew to San Francisco, you went to Kansas City, you then go to Jacksonville, the other side of the country, and then you had this little puddle hopper over to Minnesota. So this is a challenging stretch. It's challenging to be able to maintain that consistency and being able to try to develop a rhythm in your routine. Well, now you get that opportunity, even though it will be uneven that 1 week when they have the Thursday night game. And realistically, If you win your home games, you go 4-4 on the road. That's a 12-4
season.
You can't bank on that, but you can. This is where you need to take care of business. I think the Packers certainly understand that. And hearing a lot of the guys talk in the locker room afterwards, they get that you have to learn from these mistakes in this game, but at the same time, you can't dwell on it because the Lions are coming in, and they obviously are feeling a good deal of momentum as well with where their offense is at.
Yeah, for sure. The schedule, as Mike McCarthy has talked about all through the offseason, through training camp, there's no flow to it. It has all of these ups and downs. These first two games were very challenging. Now it really skews in Green Bay's favor with all these home games, but then there's a three-game road stretch coming up in November. So this is the stretch that you've got to get some things ironed out when you've got the home cooking. It's finding that rhythm on the offense. Aaron Rodgers talked about after the Vikings game about finding that identity on offense, whatever it's going to be, what you're going to hang your hat on. And on defense, I think it's about limiting the big plays. If the other team is going to get six or seven explosive plays in the passing game every week, that's going to make things tough. But you cut those in half, they're going to make some plays. But if those explosive plays are only three or four instead of six or seven, your defense is in a lot better shape. And the Packers need to use this stretch of home games to get those things ironed out.
You have to get the mouthwash out here. You got to go and get this game against Detroit. If you turn that around, you get a lot different feeling going into that bye week. And as it turns out, the Packers, that might be coming at a good time for them. I know we always end up saying that, it seems like, but Morgan Burnett dealing with the hamstring injury right now. LaTroy Guyon goes down with a knee injury in that game, doesn't return. So there are certain things, as noticed, particularly on that defense, that they're going to be looking to really get freshened up here going into this now latter half of the season.
Yeah, for sure. And as we talked about the division opponents, it doesn't get any easier when you have another division foe coming in, one who's going to be geared up after dropping a really tough game at home, giving up two touchdowns late to lose to the Tennessee Titans.
Right.
So, well, we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Plenty more to talk about as the week continues. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.